Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Chris, I normally start these types of things asking players what it's like to be a footballer, because I think majority of our listeners and me are sort of obsessed by that. But in your case, I think I'll ask you what it's like to not be a footballer, because for the first time in a long time, you're no longer a pro footballer, and what you've been up to.
Yeah, it's different, certainly different, adapting. I think coming up to 2 years now, I think it is, since I retired. My last club was at Preston. I did sign for Bury, but for certain reasons, stuff that just wasn't, it wasn't, you know, I felt it was time to retire. Mm-hmm. So just first 6 or 7 months, just spending time with the family. I've said to you before, it's, you don't get a chance to do stuff when you are probably, you know, we're very privileged, but doing the family stuff, which is most important, you have to sort of miss out on days out and going on bike rides and stuff. So,
and holidays and stuff as well.
Holidays, yeah. I mean, during the school holidays, obviously, we're in pre-season. So, you know, for them 6 weeks, 7 weeks, you can't go on holidays with your family. Obviously, we do it at different times, but it's just doing the normal, I call it the normal stuff. So we've really enjoyed that. Played a lot of golf, which has been great. A lot of walks with the dog, as you can see. And starting planning then to what I wanted to do, which is my own goalkeeper academy, which we've just got up and running now, which is going great. Doing stuff with the media, Sky, you know, Liverpool TV, which I've really enjoyed. But yeah, long term, you know, I was goalie coach at Port Vale. Michael Brown ran me just before last Christmas and said, look, will you come in? I've got the job. So I've gone in there and done first team, which has been great experience for 6-7 months. But now, the academy is going to take priority over the next 6-12 months.
Great. And if you can hear a bit of noise in the background, that's Sam the dog, isn't it, as you alluded to just a second ago. He refused to leave the room, which is fair enough because it's his house and not mine. So he likes to have a bit
snoring away.
He likes to have a bit of a snore. So I suppose ever since you can remember, football as a profession is all you've really known. Were you always a sort of standout athlete as a kid? Did you always sort of naturally gravitate towards goalkeeping, particularly?
Not really. No. When I was youngster, I was quite chubby.
Right.
I was quite a big lad. Loved my food.
Is that still the same now?
Do like my food now, yeah. Yeah, still like it, yeah.
But when I asked you to mic check to say what you've had for breakfast, it went like 10 minutes.
Yeah, the omelette, everything, yeah. So, no, I do like my food. But I probably do more now than I did when I played. Like, I always go to the gym, always out and walks, bike rides, everything, golf. So, yeah, I need to keep the food in. But as I said...
How you started?
How I started, probably... more, it wasn't until, I always wanted to be a footballer, but I was on pitch and I was never any good, and I was always on subs when I was growing up and not getting on.
But were you
on.
Actually okay? By your standards?
No,
now,
no, even then I admit, I was atrocious.
Because you're an international footballer, right? So your standard is very high. So if I see my mate who's quite good at football, I'll say he's quite good. But to you, that'll probably be bad.
Yeah, well, I was on the bench, so I couldn't have been, I couldn't have been that good. Okay. So that sort of gave it away to me a little bit. But, and then I tried my hand in goal and wasn't happening, so I got told I wasn't good enough actually on pitch and in goal when I was younger by a coach, which this was when about 9 or 10, which was a little bit harsh.
You can't really tell then, can you?
Because then I think he's regretted it since. My dad's never let him forget it. But then obviously just, I think it's more of a mates thing, you know. Your mates play football, so you play football and stuff. I was keen on golf back then as well. But we didn't, mum and dad didn't have the money to get the equipment, and as a lot of families do.
There's no barriers to football, really, is there?
No, there's not. No, you say you can play on your bare feet if you want down the park, and a bit dangerous, like, but but you can do. But yeah, it wasn't until, as I've said to you, until I was about 15 where something clicked and something just fell into place.
So before 15, when this sort of thing happened, I mean, what level were you playing at? Were you at academies or...?
No. I was... I don't think academies were about back then.
We're not that old. We're the same age.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, no, it's... I was... I think where it really took off as well was when I was at Blaby and Whetstone, which was about a half-hour drive where grandparents used to live. And Mick Pearson, Paul Dannan was there. And they sort of went above and beyond. And, you know, they would stay behind training and give me extra. And that's where I really progressed very quickly. And we had a good team as well, Blaby and Whetstone. For a lot of people, if they know anything about them, they're one of the good teams around the district then. A lot of, you know, ex-pros played for them. And it just took off from there and things started to click and I was getting noticed and went up to trial at Blackburn, but I was useless for some reason, whatever.
So if you're a promising young goalkeeper and you get asked to go to someone like Blackburn, which is a big club, historic club, I mean, and you say, in your own words, you were useless. Is that a nerves thing? Or
I think it could be, possibly. Yeah,
how old were you then?
What was I when I went there? Was I 14?
Okay.
14 or 15, maximum 15.
Okay.
So went up there. Yeah, possibly. I've always been a home bird, so being away, that probably had an effect on it.
Yeah.
But George Hayes was the one that come and said, well, he would work for Blackburn. He's from Leicester. Very lovely chap, and he got me sort of noticed.
Yeah.
Even with that, it didn't work out. And he says, oh, trust me, you know, others will come in for you. And that's the way it worked out. Leicester and Coventry come in. I went down to Coventry, loved it. Oggy, Stevie Grizovic, used to take me on a Wednesday night when he was still first team. And just, we had that connection straight away. We still speak all the time now. And eventually I signed schoolboys at Coventry.
And so it's interesting to me, you saying that it took you till you were relatively quite old for a kid to become good.
Yeah.
Because I remember you, we're similar ages, I just said earlier, and I remember you being very good, very young for a keeper.
Yeah.
I mean, around 20, 21.
Yeah.
You were, I mean, decent. Like, probably decent.
Cheers.
Yeah. No, I remember that.
Yeah, then, I was late. Yeah, I think I was late, but I think I preferred it that way to the ways it is now, which I'll explain in a minute.
Okay, right. But for goalkeepers, people will think mid-30s. I mean, you could, if things have been different, I'm sure we'll talk about that, you could still be a top-level keeper now at your age.
Mm.
So what I'm saying is you developed quite late, but then you developed really quickly and to the point where you're playing first team decent level football at Coventry. Because was Magnus Hedman the keeper?
Magnus was there,
and you came through, didn't you, and you took his place basically.
I took Magnus's place,
because I remember Gordon Strachan saying that you were uncompetent.
But you could tell
he thought a lot of you at that time.
No, it was good. When I went to Coventry, that's where you get all the, you know, you get the training. I trained with Jim Blythe, who was the first team goalie coach. But again, at 16, they brought another lad in, Steve Watson from Newcastle, who was meant to be the next big thing at that age. And Coventry did a coup to get him to come to Coventry instead of joining all these other teams that he could join. So I was very aware that he was better than me, or meant to be better than me. But then we came in, and I've always had this work ethic where you work as hard as you can. And Steve, unfortunately, for whatever reason, his work ethic went downhill, whether it's moving away from Newcastle or whatever. And I quickly overtook him, very quickly overtook him. And then I was training with the first team on quite a few days, and getting involved with them. And yeah, I made my debut when I was 18, so in 2 years really, that's, it's, you know, you don't really see that as much these days apart from the top quality players. But the progression was rapid.
And what do you remember of that debut match?
Tranmere. It was in the old, I think it was the old Worthington Cup.
Yeah.
Magnus come off at half time. I went on it half time, and I remember the first thing I had to do was, a big ball got looped up into the area. It was sky high, and it was like everyone was around it. And I remember Oggie always used to say, well, I think Oggie or Jim used to say, he said, you just come out, he took it about 20 foot above everyone else.
Yeah.
It was raining.
Yeah.
It was awful. Like, it was a nightmare ball these days. Like,
yeah.
It's a nightmare ball.
Yeah.
Just come and took it. And like, apparently a lot of people just said, wow, if you can do that, it'll be all right. And they just took off from there. And I say, I wasn't there very long before I moved.
It gave you confidence, that?
Gave me great confidence, yeah. And then I played, I got in the season we got relegated, which was tough, but I played most of the games.
Yeah.
We went down at Villa Park, but it was a great learn, but it was heartbreaking to get relegated.
Yeah, but I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because the difference between an outfield player and a goalkeeper, there are a lot of differences,
yeah,
in training, in performance, in what you're expected.
Yeah.
And I often think, and we saw it happen with Jordan Pickford in the summer, a team can get relegated, but a goalkeeper can come out with amazing credit because they're so active.
So active.
Was it one of those seasons, you think?
I think it was, yeah. I think it was for me as well. We were under the cosh a lot. We had some good players, though. We had a great manager. Gordon was fantastic. You know, we had a lot of players, Dion Dublin, Robbie Keane, Gary McAllister. The names are just, we shouldn't have got relegated, really. Mm. But, you know, a lot of teams can say that these days, well, we should never have gone down. But if you don't win games, you never.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a great learning curve. And for him to put his trust in an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, to in front of Magnus, who was Sweden's number one.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously under a lot of pressure to play him. But it was great. And as I say, it was heartbreaking when we got relegated.
And is it an interesting relationship between a sort of experienced, established goalkeeper and a young up-and-coming talent? Because you train very closely together. I don't really know. I don't know Magnus Hedman.
He was brilliant.
But they're expected to help you on.
Yeah.
You come on with them, you play in training, they bring you on, you work together.
Yeah.
But there must be a little thing at the back of their mind thinking, I don't want this guy to be too good.
Oh, he would have been Magnus, yeah. But I mean, I shared a room with Magnus for a while when I first got in, but then I had to move because he was snoring, believe it or not. Snoring was horrendous. So I went to the coach and said, look, I can't sleep because he's snoring all night. So
you didn't go to him?
No. So, well, I knew. We had a great relationship, me and Magnus. So I'd throw stuff at him during the night. And even though I was an 18-year-old kid, I'm thinking, I'm throwing something here at Sweden's number one.
Yeah.
And he'd go like that. So eventually I had to move out. But me, with Jim Blythe, the goalie coach, with Oggie, who was still there, obviously, who was the hardest. That's where I've got my work. I've always said it. He was the hardest worker I've ever seen in football.
Right.
He was out at 9:30. He used to take some of the academy lads out to do crossing. An hour before we started training, he'd train, he'd do shooting after, he'd be the last in, he'd go to the gym, he'd do so much, and that's where that's what I took my work ethic from him.
Right, okay. And so, and then your career continued to rise from there, really, didn't it? And you became the UK's most expensive goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean,
6 million quid, was it?
Yeah, I think, actually know, I think it was, what was it then? I was 19.
Right.
Yeah, I think I was 19.
It's reported as £6 million.
I think that's right. I did, back then you don't really get involved. Not like now, you know, sort of thing. But back then, you just, when you're a kid as well, you're not like, just, you know, the more
get on with it,
the more daunting thing was. I mean, I'd read about it. Obviously, it was publicised for a while, and I actually knew it was going to happen before, about 6 months before it did.
How did you know?
Because I got a call off Gary McAllister, who his wife wasn't very well. When Gary was at Liverpool, his wife wasn't well back down home, and he come down and trained with Coventry again just to keep his fitness up while his wife went through treatment. Fortunately, she passed away, but Gary come down and he went back up and said to Gerard, he said, look, I've been training at Coventry. He said, they got this lad here, Chris, who I was with when I was there, but he's progressed and I think you should take a look at him. And so it come from that, and then he'd ring me every month or so saying, right, we're going to, you know, Gerard loves you, he's going to buy you. And I'm like, I can't believe I'm, you know, it was literally that. Gary says it is. I said to Leon, he says, well, he said it is, but probably won't happen. Something will happen. But
You mean Gerard Houllier here, not Steven Gerrard?
Yes, Gerard Houllier. Gerard Houllier. Well, he might have been Steven, how good he was. But Gerard Houllier. And then I had two good games against them. At Anfield, we got smashed 4-1, but I come out with a lot of praise from that. And then at Highfield Road, we lost 2-0. And then, so I knew it was going to happen, but until it actually did, until it actually, you got that phone call. So it was on deadline. It was a day before deadline day. And we were in a fire and safety meeting with Coventry youth team, because I was still involved with the youth team at Coventry. Right. So we were at Highfield Road, and the time was ticking. I spoke to I can't remember who it was, because it wasn't my agent at the time, because I didn't have one, but somebody rang me and said, look, I'm acting on behalf or whatever, and they're going to make the move today for you. So the time was ticking on. It was getting late. It was about 4:30, 5:00. And I was thinking, well, it's not going to happen.
Did you want to go badly?
Well, this is it. And then Gordon Strachan popped his head round the door, and as soon as he popped his head round the door, he went, like, pointing to me, and I went, oh, God.
Yeah.
And I knew what it was. He went, right, we've had a bid off Liverpool. I think he said 5 million. We've had a bid off Liverpool, 5 million plus appearances. What do you want to do? And I just froze, and I thought...
So at this point, you've got no advisor with you?
No.
It's just you?
I didn't have an agent, yeah. Just me in the office with Gordon Strachan, yeah.
Making probably the biggest decision of your career at 19 on your own.
On my own, yeah, Gordon Strachan. So I just says... I don't think I said anything to start. I just said, I don't know. He says, well, do you want Oggy to come in? So Oggy was there. So Oggy come in as well, the office.
Yeah.
And he was great. He calmed us down. He says, look, I know your head was spinning everywhere. He says, but just go up and talk to him. He says, just go up to Liverpool. And he says, I guarantee when you go up, he says, you won't be back. And he says, but if you don't, if you want to come back. And that's the thing that Coventry did. They never put any pressure on me. We got relegated. The finances were down. They were selling players left, right and centre.
Yeah.
They never put any pressure on me to go. They said, look, if you don't want to go, we'll keep you here and you'll play for us for as many years as you want. So they never put it right up until the last minute when I spoke to the chairman, Brian Richardson, before I was going to sign. He said, listen, are you sure you want to sign for him? He says, because we would love to have you back. And so they never put any pressure on us. But once I got up there, I mean, it's the only team I would have left Coventry for, because I supported Liverpool. I travelled up on the bus with my dad when I was a kid from Hinckley all the way up to Anfield. Stood in the cop back then because it was standing.
Yeah.
So it was the only team, I've said that many times, I'd have never left for anyone else, but I'd have only left for Liverpool.
And so when you made that big jump, and it is a big jump, isn't it, with respect to Coventry, they're a big club as well, but it's a big jump. When you ended up going up to talk to Liverpool and negotiate the deal and all that stuff, was your dad with you? Or
Yeah, so my dad come up, the agent who I went with, he come up, Leona come up, my wife.
So you were with her then as well? So
We've been together, about 18 odd years now,
Okay.
So we all went up, and I think my uncle come up as well. So we all went up to drove up on the, when was he on the, I think it was a Thursday. So we drove up on a Thursday night, all the stuff got happened on the Friday. It was deadline day on the Friday, signed, it was all done, and then we were back home Friday night to get all my gear to go back up on the Sunday. So he was in a hotel, did all the medicals, everything like that. Went to Anfield on the Friday, had all the talks, got shown around the ground, around the training ground, which back then was terrible. The training ground at Liverpool, to what it is now, Melwood. So it was, compared to what the training grounds are now. I mean, compared to some of them, it was great, but now it was just worlds apart.
Yeah.
And then sign, and driving back down, just thinking, God, you know, I was more, because I've always been a home bird, I was more worried about.
I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
Yeah, but I was more worried about leaving the family. But it was definitely easier because I had Leona, so we moved up together. If I was on my own, then things might have took a different path when I come up with all the trappings and everything like that. But she kept me grounded, and as I say, I don't regret it at all. All the injuries happened, but I'd do it all again just for one game.
Were you scared?
Petrified. You're playing football, but I've said this, mate, when you're a kid and you just want to play football, you're not bothered about everything else that goes on. So at Coventry, even though it was in the Premier League, it was just like, I couldn't wait to get into training. Like the night before, I would be like, oh, brilliant, I'm training tomorrow, I can't wait to get up, get in early. Everything like that. That's all the way it used to be for me. It's not until you get older when you realise some of the magnitude of the games you're playing, and you think, if we lose here today, we could be whatever. But when you're a kid, you don't think about any of that.
More fearless. So you develop more fear as you get older.
As you get older, because you realise what's on. Like at Wigan, we were in a relegation battle nearly every year, and you realise what was on games, and that's all you were thinking about. When you're younger, you're not bothered. But when I went to Liverpool, It was an eye-opener, just because I walked into the changing room, Michael Owen's there. And no disrespect to players at Coventry, because we had some really, really good players and some household names. But at Liverpool, it's completely different. It's when you go abroad and you go on pre-season tours, and there's like thousands camping outside your hotel, and you know you're at a proper football club then.
Yeah. And do you feel that difference?
You're more aware of it. But again, back then, even when I went to Liverpool, I just wanted to play.
Expected to play as soon as you signed?
No, he told me he was signing Jersey on the same day. He said Jersey would be number one. I want you to come up, learn your trade, you know, train with us. You'll play reserve games, you'll play in cup games. But he says, but when you're ready, you'll play. He says, you got my word on that. And that's exactly the way it worked out. It's just unfortunate when I was ready, I got the injuries and they kept coming.
Were you conscious of trading essentially first team football for as long as you wanted it for a bit of an unknown future because you weren't expected to play every week?
The only team I'd have left for was Liverpool.
Yeah.
I just thought to myself, you can't turn down Liverpool. Like, you've been a fan, you've been up in Kop. I was never going to say no. It was just saying them yes words sort of thing.
Yeah.
No matter if it took me a year to whatever, I was always going to say yes. So anywhere else I wouldn't have gone because I was that happy at Coventry.
Because the footballer's mentality, from my experience of speaking to footballers, is I can remember the example I always use is Scott Parker going to Chelsea.
Mm.
And everyone says, why is he going to Chelsea? He's never going to get in the team. He's never going to play.
Mm.
But of course, from the footballer's point of view, you back yourself. You're confident because you're a professional athlete. You've worked really hard to get where you are.
Yeah.
And you back yourself to get in the team.
Mm.
So presumably you had a bit of that about you going to Liverpool as well.
When I'm young. I mean, nowadays, I'm sure players might not admit it, but some players now will just go for the money in the day and age now. But back then, the money was great, but it's nowhere near as it is now. So some players will, if they're honest, they'll admit, I had to go because I probably weren't going to play, but they're going to pay me four times as much, whatever. This I'm on about nowadays, but back then didn't bother me at all. I don't think I even asked how much I was getting at Liverpool. I was kept out of that completely.
Right.
I was never involved in any of them negotiations. I just wanted to, you know, to sign for them, and it wasn't about the money back then or anything like that.
Was it a club that made you feel welcome when you got there?
Brilliant. I say we got up there, we had the medical and everything like that. We drove up on a Thursday, got to the hotel, it was late, we got there to about 10:30 at night because the traffic on the M6 was a nightmare. Went straight from my medical. I was in a hospital at 11 at night doing all that sort of stuff.
What are they doing in medical?
Literally just lying in a scanner for like 2 hours. They'll scan your knees, your ankles, all your major joints and everything like that, just to see if there's anything. So you're literally in a scanner for 2 hours. So
you don't really run in or any movement or anything like that?
No, you've got to sit still for two hours. Yeah, you'll have a break for like, they'll bring it back out for 30 seconds, you have a sip of water and then you go back in. But yeah, it's like it's claustrophobic, really claustrophobic.
It's like a big MRI scan basically.
Yeah, one of them, yeah. Yeah,
they don't put you on a treadmill and work out how fit you are.
I never did that. That's what they do nowadays. But back then it was more about your joints and stuff like that because fitness back then, there was no core, all that sort of stuff. It wasn't in. So, you know, you didn't have people looking after your diet, looking after you, how far you
ran. Even in Liverpool?
When we went to Liverpool, that's when it progressed. At Coventry, no. No, right. Not at Coventry. But when we went to Liverpool, that's when it progressed. But even back then, it was still very, very, very limited to what it is now.
Mm.
Like now it's, you can't, you know, you go toilet, you have to monitor it and stuff
right.
like that.
Yeah, okay, right.
It's, yeah, some of the stuff now.
And do you think that would annoy you if you were playing now?
All that?
Yeah.
No, you can't, no.
You seem like quite a dedicated sort of level-headed sort of player.
Yeah.
You were.
Yeah, right? I'd have done it. I'd have done all that, anything to help. Yeah, I'd have done all that sort of stuff.
And do you remember your Liverpool debut, presumably?
Yeah, Grimsby. And it might have been the Worthington Cup again.
Good to you, that competition, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a Tuesday night, or Wednesday night at Anfield, and just going to penalty. We played Grimsby, it was 1-1. Coming to the end of extra time, so we're going to penalties and I'm thinking brilliant, could be penalties front of the cot. And then Phil Jevons, who was an Everton fan, popped one in from about 35 yards. Like, it's the best goal I've ever seen.
Why
didn't
you save it?
I got nowhere near it. Like, there's videos and all sorts on it, and it's just one of them shots that you just got no chance of getting.
Did you move for it?
I dived everything. Yeah. I had a great dive for it. Like, I was like miles in the air and I was still nowhere near it. It's one of them that just dipped like over it. And you'll probably Google it later on.
Yeah,
but
I will.
It's an incredible strike. And
I might put that video to accompany the interview, Chris.
Yeah, 119th minute or something like that. And it was behind the goal where the Grimsby fans were. They had like 6,000 behind on the Anfield Road end. And yeah, so that was my debut.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sadly, like, we have to mention injuries that you had in your career and stuff. I can't really not do that, I'm afraid. But when you weren't an injury-prone player as a young man.
No, not at all, no.
Was it a case of you got one injury and then it just sort of spiralled?
I just think it was bad luck. I mean, I had a...
two of them are broken fingers, weren't they?
That one there. You see that one?
Wow, you can't even straighten that.
Yeah, no, I can't. That's just dead. That one was Kevin Davis. At Anfield, just come out to catch a ball, and he's coming hit us.
So these are impact injuries. Unlucky.
Yeah, and the ball just hit me on the end of the thing. Yeah, and I was out for 3 months. It was in the 70th minute, so I think we'd used all the subs. So I stayed on for the last 20 minutes, but I just couldn't. I was just trying to protect that hand. And
it was painful.
It was sore. And then come off and went at Anfield. They had X-ray machines there, as they do at most top grounds now. So yeah. The X-ray. That's that was 3 months. But I had a big problem in my back when I was at Liverpool because, as I said, back then, the rehab you got now and the core and all that sort of strength work, you didn't have it back then. It just wasn't, you know, the physios did the best they could, but they just didn't have all that knowledge and stuff like you do now. So the back was a big one, but I did my cruciate in a game in the FA Cup at Crystal Palace. Daly had a bowley, slid in, I slid into him, and we clashed knee to knee. And he's a big boy, Daly. Yeah. He's a big boy. So I come off worse, and I was out for 8-9 months with that.
Did you know straight away?
Yeah, knew straight away, yeah. Yeah, it was sore, really sore. So flew out to Stedman, actually.
Richard Stedman,
to him, but he couldn't operate because the PCL was at the back of your knee. You'd think you could go in through the back of your knee, but you can't. You have to go through your kneecap, and there's all sorts of complications with PCL. So he said, leave it. So I had to do my own rehab on it.
Does that give you pain now?
No, it's been good, to be fair. I've never had any problems with it since. Yeah.
Because another, I mean, a mutual acquaintance of ours, Matt Murray, who had to retire through knee injuries, he said even when he was apparently fully rehabbed, he couldn't rip through the ball for a goal kick. And he still said he could never do that.
Yeah, no, I never had any problems with it. Did the rehab right. And whether that's because there wasn't a knife put in it or whether that has some effect as you go on. Because obviously sticking a knife in your body is not good anywhere. So, I had that one, come back from that one, broke my wrist in training. Harry Kuehl hit a shot from about 4 yards away as hard as he could. I just stuck my hand out and it bent it right back, so I snapped that.
Should he be doing that in training?
Well, it was point blank range, and I always ask, why did you smash it? It was literally 3 or 4 yards away, and I was gone like that. So I knew that was, but that was just before the Euros as well, Euro 2004.
Yeah.
And put me out of that because I was going to go. Yeah. So that put me out of that.
I understand if you don't want to go into too much detail, but how difficult is it psychologically to not be able to do your job as a professional athlete because you're injured all the time?
It's tough as well. Yeah, it's really tough, especially at Melwood as well, when the new Melwood got built, because it was such a big place.
You wouldn't see anyone.
So you'd be doing your own rehab in the gym and you'd literally be the only person in the gym. Yeah. You'd see in Melwood all the glass points outside so you could see the training, so you'd see the lads out training.
That's terrible.
And, it's really, really hard. I mean, they do a lot of stuff now where they try and mix it up now, your rehab and stuff like that, but being injured is awful. Yeah, you can't, as you say, you can't do your job.
You're just into the gym on your own?
In the gym.
Or with the other injured?
I mean, the facilities were brilliant at Melwood. We had a pool in there and stuff, so you could do all that. So when I did my knee, they got me a waterproof brace for it so I could go and swim and stuff like that. So you do keep active, but all you want to do is kick a ball around or try and catch a ball.
Did they give you mental support?
Back then it wasn't, no.
Do you think they should do that?
Nowadays.
They do it now, do they?
Oh, yeah, they have to. There's still a lot of stuff that clubs can do better. We've seen the mental side of things now. We've got everything that's come out and stuff. But back then it was, I mean, they did a great job, but it just wasn't about back then.
I remember seeing interview with a guy who played at Man United in the 80s, and he was a really highly rated young player called Giuliano Maiorana. And he had a cruciate.
Mm.
And he was, back then in the 80s, that was a career ender. So yeah. He basically was never going to come back.
Yeah.
And at Man United, who obviously one of the biggest clubs in the world now, he was just released. There was no press release. There was no statement. Mm. I mean, not even the other players were told. He just didn't turn up one day, and that was it. He was gone. Was it. To me, that seems absolutely shocking. You can do that to an athlete who's still a really young man. I think he was about 19 or 20 at the time.
Yeah.
It makes the players feel like they're pieces of meat, essentially, just bought and sold, and that's the end of it.
We've seen it before. Yeah, as soon as the players, we've seen it happen with top class players that they're adored. Yeah. And then all of a sudden they'll be getting booed for, you know, and these are people that you've had, like Wayne Rooney's had it, Michael Owen had it, all the top players.
Yeah.
You know, they're adored by fans, and then all of a sudden they don't score for two games or they miss whatever and they're getting booed. It's just, you sort of get left out to
dry. Does that affect you in your career? Or do you try and block it out?
Not really, because I've been, luckily enough, I've never really had that abuse before, even when I've been fortunate at every club where, you know, I've done okay for them. Obviously, the injuries are, I think the biggest frustration for Liverpool fans was that when I did get in and started doing well and showing people what I could do, then I'd get injured again. But there was nobody more frustrated than me
with that.
And I think sometimes people forget that, saying, oh, they're not bothered to get in pay or whatever like that. But as I said to you, when I was younger, it was a lot harder than when it was when you're older, definitely.
Clear, every footballer I've ever met does care quite a lot.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are some who don't, but mostly, and all the ones I've met do care about.
Yeah, well, there's different ways. Listen, would you play football if players now, you've got to be honest, would you play football if you weren't getting paid for it? Hmm. Probably a lot of them would say, well, I probably still would, but
not at that level.
Not that level or stuff. Anything like that. Yeah. So now there's ways to do it. You get paid great amounts of money, but there's still ways to do things right. You still do the right things. You still do the best you possibly can. A lot of players, I've played with players where all they're bothered about is getting the paycheck at the end of the month, and they're not bothered about results, or they're not bothered about this, that and that. And I've played with a lot of players like that.
Right.
But there is a lot more players that do it and do the right stuff.
But how does that affect the dressing room though?
This is one of the big things. I mean, we had a couple, I won't mention any names at Wigan, but people probably know who they are, that all they wanted to do was they weren't bothered. They just wanted to get the money. We got beat at Spurs 9-1.
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
And we come back, and it was a horrendous time, and we wanted to pay the fans back who
in goal at that?
Yeah, I was in goal. Yeah, it was 1-0 at half time.
You were fuming then?
Half time being 1-0 down?
No.
I was at half time at 9-1. I was devastated.
So there's nothing you can do.
It was awful.
And a keeper, there's nothing you can do.
No, well, I mean, there was probably a couple I could have done better with.
But the point is, they're getting all these chances over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, but so that week we wanted to do something back for the fans. So we said, right, we'll all chip in and pay for their tickets down there and their travel or whatever like that. And one player stood up and went, no, I'm not. And,
really?
And said, why? Well, because I don't care. Huh. Literally, and just walked out.
So everyone thought,
more or less everyone else bar one man said they weren't going to do it. Yeah,
and you just thought, dickhead.
Well, yeah, we knew that anyway before.
Okay,
we knew he was anyway before. Yeah.
Okay, right.
But yeah, that's one of them players that just, you know, and if you're on it, if players are honest, players nowadays do it because of the money, but you still do the right things because of it. You know,
don't you think the top players even now, they want to win?
That's what I'm saying. Do the right things.
Yeah,
you know, you do, you, like Ronaldo, his desire is just incredible. Yeah. The way he looks after himself, everything like that.
Yeah,
I'm sure he loves checking his money at the end of the month. But then that's probably what drives him on to be the best, and that's what you've got to do.
Yeah. So we'll come on to Wigan in a minute. I want to talk a bit about the Champions League in 2005 because. You played four games?
In
the group stage?
Yeah, and then I played the Olympiakos game.
Yeah.
At Anfield.
Yeah.
And then, I think it was my back injury. I had a back operation.
Right.
That ruled me out for the rest of the campaign, and missed the... I was out there for the final, we went out.
But you weren't in the squad?
I wasn't in the squad, no.
Jeremy Carragher told me, because I spoke to him about the Champions League final, he said at half-time, if they'd have offered him...
Oh, and he took it, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was the slaughter to the lambs, first half. Yeah. It was like, how many is this going to be?
Yeah.
And then he made the one change that made a huge deal, he brought Didier Manon.
That's right, yeah.
And that changed it. He just protected the back four, and then you get a goal quickly, and then it can all change. But I mean, if AC Milan would have come out and scored again quickly, then it would have been 6 or 7.
Yeah,
it would have been.
Ancelotti said, I wouldn't have changed anything because I can't legislate for 6 or 7 minutes of madness in a game. That just happens sometimes.
Yeah, but got a foothold, and Didi was protecting the back four more, as he did. He was fantastic. And yeah, you get one back, and then all of a sudden, then when, as soon as you got that first goal back, the whole atmosphere in the change in the stadium changed. Even though you were 3-1 down, something just,
you were in the crowd, yeah?
We was in the crowd,
with your
yeah.
old man, yeah?
No, with Leona.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So we were in the crowd together, and something just changed, and it was weird. It was unless you were there, you couldn't really experience
we've
it.
We've all been there as football fans. Yeah. Like, you know something's happening.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And there's no one can stop it.
Well, we were level within, what, 12 or 13 minutes. Yeah. All of a sudden, it was 3-3 again.
Yeah.
So, and then you just knew that we were going to win it. Like, even at 3-1, you just knew something. It was going to win it.
I don't mean this to sound like a cruel question.
Yeah.
But did you feel a part of it?
No.
Because the reason
No, you don't.
But you've contributed in the group stage to get
there. Yeah, but when you don't play in that actual game, the actual final, the one that everybody's watching, the one that everyone will remember, nobody remembers who played in the games before. That's just the way it is.
Would you have felt a part of it if you were on the bench?
No, probably not, no. You'd feel a part of it, but there's still that sense that you've not played, so you know, you've not had an impact on that particular game.
Okay.
So, never got a medal for it. We meant to get a medal for it, but they got snatched by someone, I don't know who took them.
Well, the reason I was asking the question in the first place on the subject of medals is that I read that Scott Carson offered you his medal.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
And you refused to take it.
Yeah, because again, he
it was nice for him to offer.
Brilliant, yeah. Well, Scott's a great lad. I've known Scott many years, and he's but he was involved, obviously, on the day. He was on the bench in the games before when I missed. So, yeah, no, that it wouldn't mean, not that it wouldn't mean anything, because that sounds wrong, but it wouldn't mean as much as to actually playing in it.
So if you did play in it, you've had the medal up on your wall now, and that'll be that?
It'll be, oh yeah, 100%, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably my daughter's room, not mine.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Right. When you went to Wigan, and you were still only 25 years old,
yeah.
So all this has happened. We talked for half an hour or whatever, all the stuff you've achieved and all everything that's gone on your career.
Yeah.
And we get to you going to Wigan, and you're still only 25.
Yeah.
So at that point, you're still thinking best years ahead of me.
Yeah.
And to an extent, they were, weren't
they? Yeah, they were, 100%, yeah.
07-08, you had a brilliant season, player of the year and all that. Player of the year, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we'll come on to that in a moment. But when did it become apparent that you were going to need to move on from Anfield?
When was it? Yeah, so 2000 and... I went on loan to West Brom in 2005 season, 2006.
Right. Yeah.
And then I come back and... Basically, Rafa said, look, I want a foreign goalkeeper.
What was Rafa like with you when he came in?
I had not big problems, I've never been rude to anyone, but the goalkeeping style, this is a big, big thing for me that happened at Liverpool. When things were going good, it's because I had an English goalie coach. When things went bad,
right.
The same happened at Wigan, is when I had a foreign goalie coach.
What do you think that is?
Because the training is completely different. They don't let you train the way you train English goalkeepers. I was brought up on Oggy and Jim Blythe, volley, repetition, you know, get your hands in, get your sights. But foreign goalkeeper coaches are very, very different. A lot of it was very slow. Hardly any work you were doing, hardly anything during training, so you could come off and think, I've not done anything.
Why do you think that is?
Because that's the way they want to be. Rafa's, Rafa's his very own man. It's what he says goes.
Why do you think? Is it Spanish goalkeeping?
Yeah, coach? Spanish goalie coach. Yeah.
Why do you think he thinks that's the best way of doing it?
No idea.
So there was no back and forth between you.
Obviously, the Spanish goalie coach didn't speak any English at all.
Right.
Which didn't help again, because the relationship you have to have with your goalie coach is big.
Yeah, he's big.
But yeah, it just didn't work out. And my game, I was going into games not ready. My form dipped dramatically when towards the latter end of my Liverpool career, got dropped, and rightly so, because but I was going into games thinking, I ain't done any work here. Like yesterday, Thursday, Friday for keepers, important days, because you get your hands in, you get sharp, you do what you want and stuff like that. But I wasn't getting that at Liverpool, and I'd say to them, like I said, I need more work, I need to train more. No, you don't, this is the way forward,
right.
And all this sort of stuff. So they were telling you something that you'd grew up on for,
right, yeah,
for
yeah.
15 years
without even consulting you.
So that's why it dropped, and ended up leaving, and needed to leave, which was heartbreaking to leave Liverpool. But Paul Jewell rang me and said, come here, he's got an English goalie coach, Gary Walsh, and I knew that I had to go somewhere that had an English goalie coach to get back to basics.
And the reason I asked the question is because clearly there are a lot of really good foreign goalkeepers.
Yeah.
It obviously works for them.
Yeah, well, exactly.
It's just, for you, it's just you grew up with something
that's
completely different.
That's what got me to where I was, training that way. And I didn't want to go, I wanted to get back to that. And I said, right, if I'm going to leave, it's got to be somewhere that I can get back to that. And I went to Wigan, and it's just one of them moments that just clicked. As soon as you go somewhere, it just clicked, and my form come back quickly. And I made my England debut when I just signed for, before I actually played the first game for... for Wigan and played at Old Trafford on the Wednesday, and then we had the debut at Newcastle for Wigan on the Saturday.
And your dad won some money.
And my dad won some money.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. Dad and family, yeah. They put £100 on it, 100 to 1, which odds back then were atrocious. 100 to 1, like, it's bad, like, you think you get, especially if he'd have took me into the bookies when he put it on when I was 13 and seen the size I was.
Yeah, right.
He could have got about a million to 1.
Did the bookmaker pay out?
Yeah, they paid up. Yeah, it's William Hill. Yeah, so okay. They paid up, so they got that. So then I played, made my debut for Wigan on the Saturday, and I just had a great time there. Really great time. We ended up staying up, and then Paul Jewell left after he kept us up, and Steve Bruce come in, and
yeah,
and that he was one of the best I've worked with.
What was it like playing for England?
It was great. It was old. I mean, I've been in a lot.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, it's I wouldn't say it was the pinnacle of my career, because the pinnacle was for playing for Liverpool for me. Yeah. Being in England. Okay. You know, if I'd have played more games for England, then maybe. But it was. I was in loads of squads before. I was meant to be making my debut for a couple of years before.
Yeah.
Obviously, when I went to Liverpool when I was 19, 20, but it just never worked out for injuries or whatever. So it was 25, 26 when I made my debut. Half a game and great, but then, yeah, that was it, sort of thing.
Do you think you could, if injury-free, you would have played a lot of games for England?
Yeah. Well, this is one thing that I always can't help but think about now. Somebody said to me a few years ago, you know, do you ever think, or a couple of years ago, would you ever think what you could have done if you wouldn't have had the injuries? And you do. And I do think, you know, how good could I have been? But that's hindsight. You could say a lot of things about that.
But do you think, fully fit and on form, you're the best goalkeeper in England?
Back then, when I went to Liverpool, well, Liverpool bought me. They thought I was. So I was. I certainly wasn't fearless or anything like that. I was fearless. I just wanted to train. I wanted to save every shot. And more times than not, I managed to do that.
Were there any goalkeepers around in the England setup at that point where you thought, I've got
to? Paul Robinson. So probably Paul Robinson was doing well at Leeds.
Yeah. He went through a period of being number one for a while, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when we grew up through the under 18s and the 21s together. But no, I always backed myself at that age back then.
I always find it curious when the media, people in the media, and obviously I know I work in the media, but I try not to do this. But players, you know, I don't really care about playing for England. Every single ex-England international I've ever spoken to knows exactly who they made their debut against, how many caps they got in total, pretty much everything about it. It does mean an awful lot to them.
Of course it does, especially when your family's there and that as well.
But is yours just tempered by the fact that you thought you could have got more caps?
Yeah, definitely. As I said, it was a great night. Wish it was at Anfield instead of Old Trafford.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was a great night, and I say it was one that I can remember as though it was yesterday still. But the biggest, because I'd supported Liverpool and come up as a kid and travelled up.
That was important to you.
That was the biggest moment for me,
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, no one can take that cap away from you now.
No.
It's something to be really proud of, isn't it? It's like with watching a bit of golf earlier. If you win a major, you're done now.
You're done, everything,
no one can take that from you. You're a major champion.
No.
You will always be an international footballer. So that is amazing.
No, it's great, It's great, especially when, say, my daughter Lucy's nearly 11 now. She's a goalkeeper as well, actually.
So she
always says about that. Yeah, all my friends always say, "Oh, your dad played for England and stuff like that." So it's great from that. And so if I could do it again, I'd love to. But it's still a little bit of bitterness that I've got so many injuries.
Well, the England setup isn't great in the moment. You're not that old.
Yeah, I'm not that old now, but I feel it.
I feel
it more than I did when I was 20.
I feel it.
Yeah.
Why do you think it worked out so well for you at Wigan then? Because, like I said, in 2007, 2008, you were player of the season.
English manager, English goalie coach.
And that worked
English
for you.
English staff, yeah. Yeah, that worked for me. And clicked straight away. Gary Walsh was brilliant. And then Gary left, obviously, not long after Steve Bruce come in, because he wanted to bring Nigel Spink in. But again, Nigel Spink was the same mould as Gary Walsh. Old school English, whatever you wanted, you got repetitions off, follies, up, down, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is stuff I'd been brought up on, and my form just went through the roof. It was, you know, that 07 08 season was, we ended up staying up at Villa Park, and I got player of the year that year. And then Steve left and went to, where did he go in 2010 after that?
Sunderland, didn't he?
Sunderland. And then Roberto, there was talk he wanted to take me up there, and they were going to make a bid, but Roberto was the manager at Wigan, and he told me I couldn't leave.
Did you want to leave?
Only because I'd worked with Steve and worked with Nigel, but not really, no, because our daughter was only 2-3 years old and we were settled.
So no one thinks about that side.
Probably not. No, probably not. Probably wouldn't have left. But things started to go downhill at Wigan because Roberto come in and he brought a foreign goalie coach in.
Again, right, yeah.
Same things happened. I could feel myself slipping, like form-wise, sharpness-wise. My form was going, and you know, I had the same argument—not arguments, same discussions with them. Saying, "Look, I need."
You were a senior pro at that point, so your word didn't have any swing.
No, didn't have any swing at all. No, so my form dipped dramatically again. Coming, 2010, 2011, and then that was the last season I played for them. I was there for another year after, but wasn't really involved. Yeah. But without, I mean, maybe that's me being stubborn and whatever, because I wanted the English goalie coach, but the facts were there, everything, even the lads.
Well, it works for you.
Well, it did work for me, and even the lads, like, as soon as the foreign goalie coach come in, like, one of them, I won't say his name, but he comes to me and says, "What do you reckon?" I says, I'm worried straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah, worried straight away.
And I've had experience of that before, it didn't work out for you.
Yeah, and that's it. But listen, that was it. And then I left to Sheffield Wednesday again. I was at a crossroads thinking, right, I've not played for a year. My form was terrible before. I need to go somewhere now where I'm going to train with a English goalie coach again. And went to Sheffield Wednesday, which is like Liverpool, incredible club.
Massive club.
Yeah. The fans are brilliant. I'm going back there Sunday, actually. I'm doing the Sky game against Leeds.
Yeah.
So whenever I go back there. But it's a fantastic club. But I needed to go somewhere that had English goalie coach. Andy Rhodes, Jordan Rhodes' dad, is the goalie coach there. And again,
he's a good coach.
Brilliant. As soon as I walked through the door, he said to me, right, he says, "I know you've had a crap time." He says, "I know you don't like, foreign goalkeeping coach don't work for you." He said, "I've looked at your career." He says, "We'll go back to basics. Whatever you want, whatever you need, I'm here for you. You tell me." And things just clicked.
I'm surprised that you've been such a senior pro and being so talented and achieving a lot in your career that they wouldn't even listen to you.
No, well, I mean,
do you feel separate from the rest of the squad as keepers when you train on your own and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
Is it almost like a little team within a team?
Yeah. And that's what you need that. I mean, he was a lovely chap, the goalie coach was. Lovely chap, but he just wasn't for me. And they knew that.
What did the other keepers in the squad think?
The other keepers, I was the number one for years there before, so they weren't playing. It was a young lad, or Polly was used to being on the bench. So they didn't really go, they didn't really get involved that much because they were okay doing what they were doing. But for me, it was a big thing. But Roberto, if people have met Roberto, he's very one-minded, and it's sort of his way or the highway. The same with Rafa, and I had to take the highway both times.
And but you enjoyed your time at Sheffield Wednesday?
Oh, it was brilliant. It was fantastic. Great club. Andy Rhodes was superb with me. Still speak to him all the time now. And yeah, I had a lucky good 3 years there. 2 years I played every game, more or less.
Yeah.
Third year, Kieran Westwood come in, who's not a bad keeper.
Yeah.
But I was getting older then as well. Yeah. So, but yeah.
Do you feel as a goalkeeper, because you're doing very defined stuff, do you feel yourself slowing down? Do you feel yourself getting a bit older? Did you ever get to a point where you thought, I would have got to that a few years ago?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, in training and stuff, yeah. And that's part of the reason why I stopped. Because you get thinking, oh, I'd have had that, or I'd have caught that 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So you do know, you do your reactions, but that's the way it is. Your reactions start to go.
Well, the reason I ask is because if you're a midfield player and you start moving further back, you can change, you can adapt.
Yeah.
Goalkeepers, you can't really
reactions are everything for keepers. Yeah. You can't really do that. So I thought I knew when the time was up. I did the assistant. I did the number two role at Preston with Jordan Pickford.
Yeah.
So I seen him coming through, and I was there to. I knew I was there just to help him and stuff like that. So that role was fine for me.
When you look back at your career, what do you think of it? Do you think you had a career that you thought you would, or did you have no expectations? Or
no. Listen, when I was younger, you dream of being a footballer, but I never thought I'd achieve what I did. Could it have been better? Yeah, I always look at that. Yeah, I wish it was, regards to the injuries, I always wonder how far could I have gone, how good could I have been without, because the injuries knock the stuffing out of you. Yeah. Especially serious ones where you're out for six, 7 months. To get going again then, and then to stop again and get going, it does knock the stuffing out of you. And your body feels it as well. Your body's never the same again after a serious injury. Everyone will tell you that who's had serious injuries. So that's the only thing that I'm upset about. Not that, regret's a strong word, but it's the only thing I wish I could maybe been differently. But playing for Liverpool, Coventry, Sheffield Wednesday, if I'd said them three at the start of my career, I'd have took that.
Did you have to tell yourself to look on the bright side? You played in the Champions League, you played for England, you played at the top level.
Yeah. I wish I'd go back and do it all again, though, because it goes so quick.
Does it?
Everyone will tell you that who plays. I can remember my debut like it was an hour ago, and all of a sudden I've retired, and it goes so quick. So that's my advice, to just try and enjoy it. Don't take things for granted, because, you know, I remember people saying to me when I was 19, 20, just enjoy it, make sure you know, and then all of a sudden you think, oh, I'm only 19, 20, I've got years and years. But it goes so quick.
This was a Radio Stakhanov production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff, like research and testing to create shoes from natural materials, like leather made from plants, eucalyptus tree fiber, and sugarcane. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at allbirds.com today. That's allbirds.com.